The Bradshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
It's Matt, Nick and Vicky with another retro movie review. We're going to talk about The Magic Christian, which is a movie that Nick kindly shared with us. Yeah. Which is a 60s, did we say?
1969.
Peter Sellers and Ringo Starr movie.
Yeah, that tells you everything you need to know, I think, about what this film could possibly have been like.
So, the thing that I can definitely say happens in this film is Peter Sellers is a rich person and adopts Ringo Starr as his son, who is previously a homeless hobo. Yeah. And everything after that, I feel like I can't really trust my own senses.
Yeah, it's like this one thing happens, this one plot point happens in the first 30 seconds, and then calamity ensues.
Well, what more do you need?
Well, true.
Peter Sellers has just adopted Ringo Starr.
Yeah, that is with no actual explanation of that happening. No. It's just they have a conversation while Ringo's feeding the ducks, but you don't hear the conversation as the viewer.
No, because you're listening to the wonderful song written by Paul McCartney.
The wonderful song, is it called "Come and Get It"?
Come and Get It.
Come and Get It. It's dreadful. Don't look it up. And it's used 7 times in the film, including at the beginning and at the end. But anyway, they have a conversation. You don't hear any of it. Peter Sellers goes to see like 17 million lawyers, signs a piece of paper, looks at Ringo Starr, and Ringo Starr says, "Father!" And that is all the explanation you receive about the fact that he has just been adopted.
Yeah.
And the trend continues, and there is a point where it seems like maybe it's going to get to a point, and Peter Sellers starts giving what might turn into a speech, and then he almost literally sort of gets distracted by a squirrel.
Yeah. That's what happens. So we looked up why this film was made and tried to understand what point it was trying to make, and some of it is it's incredibly tongue-in-cheek. It's very, very daft.
Yeah. It was late 60s, anti-establishment, anti-capitalist, but it kind of was tongue-in-cheek about anti-capitalism as well. It was kind of tongue-in-cheek, a kind of anti-protest as well. It was
There's this really good bit towards the end where Ringo Starr's character sets up something that is like a protest, and then Peter Sellers immediately turns to him and says, "Well, it is a bit literal if you get into it, isn't it?" So they're even being critical of their own, their own point they're making. So literally, I think nothing in this film was sacred.
No, nothing was sacred.
If I had to describe the experience of watching this film, I would say it's like watching a compilation of all the instances of a recurring fast show sketch, intercut sometimes with LSD era Beatles music videos.
Yes, correct. That is a rough approximation. It has that, like, if you have ever seen a film from the 60s that's trying to make a possibly slightly heavy-handed political point with some slightly new cinematic techniques people have only just realised they can do, then if you've ever seen a film like that, then it is like that film. Like, it meets those expectations. But I think it is fair to say that Ringo Starr and Peter Sellers are comedy dynamite.
They are. Yeah, and Ringo's, we were saying earlier, his deadpan delivery.
Unparalleled. It's unparalleled deadpan. If you have never seen a film with Ringo Starr in it, see one.
My favourite bit is when they're talking to the traffic warden, when he's been given a ticket, and Ringo Starr is in the car doing isometric face exercises.
It's so good.
Reading them out and doing them at the same time.
It's so
whilst
funny.
Whilst Peter Sellers pays the traffic warden to eat a ticket. You just take that and you think, clearly this is a film that had to be made.
Yeah, a film that had to be made. And it has some fantastic cameos as well. Yeah, Who did we spot?
Lawrence Harvey.
Christopher Lee, playing, of course, some kind of Dracula-based character.
Attenborough and Graham Chapman.
Welsh.
John Cleese as an auctioneer who writes "sold" on the paintings once they've been sold. I mean, I can't even. It's hilarious.
Hattie Jakes.
Loads of good people. Loads of good people. It was definitely an experience.
Talking about them as a comedy duo, though, it's not the traditional straight man, funny man.
No.
Because they're both playing completely straight. even yeah. though Peter Sellers is the one doing all of the really surreal weirdness.
Yeah, I think if I had to pick a favourite bit, it was the bit in the auction house where he's bidding on the painting a different way every time. And he's got, like, an air horn. He's got one of those, like, extendable hands that can poke the auctioneer.
He's got semaphore flags.
And, like, every time it comes back to him to bid, he does something else nuts. And it's just like, but Peter Sellers can do these nuts things in, like, the most serious way that is yeah. hilarious.
It does remind you how good Peter Sellers was, and clearly how up for anything he was.
Like, 100% of anything, yeah.
It's yeah. I mean, I love Peter Sellers films. I just think he is the one of the best comedy actors ever. And I think this, I don't know what went through their mind when they read the script. I can't imagine what the script looked like.
No.
Because there's not much of it, actually.
There's not a lot of talking, no. is there? No, there's not, like, serious, intense sections of dialogue. It's mostly people doing nut stuff.
But what did Peter Sellers think when they were like, and here's Ringo Starr? Ringo Starr at the time, it's all a bit weird.
It's 1969 as well. Yeah. So the Beatles are like, they have been pretty big for some time by this point.
Yeah.
Like,
And their films are, okay, they're wacky, they're zany, but they're not, there's wacky and zany, and I think then there's the magic Christian.
Yeah. Yes, correct. Yeah, if you have ever seen something like Yellow Submarine, it is a good comparison, but yeah, as you say, like, Yellow Submarine feels like a baby version of this film.
It's a gateway film.
Yeah, it's like a gateway film. It's like, in some ways, it's indefinable, like it's difficult.
It's nonsense, but it's trying to make a point.
But it's got a rhythm. Like, there is a point where you sort of settle into it, and you get to the point where almost throughout any scene, you're anticipating and waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yes, because some stuff starts normal, doesn't it? Yeah.
Like, there's a boxing match, and it's a very very played straight setup of the boxing match. Yeah. But you know by that point, because you've been through enough of the film already, that it's leading up to some sort of gag or just descent into weirdness.
Mm. Yep, and this time they manage both.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's just no... The setup and then the actual joke at the end. The joke at the end doesn't make any sense. So when he's buying a hot dog...
Yeah, that was random. That was bizarre.
Suddenly... He's leaning out the window with a mask of a pig.
Yeah. It's just like, where did that even come from?
Who when they wrote that, thought, you know what we need now?
Because also, like, the joke starts being, he tries to pay for the hot dog, which is 7 pence or something. Yeah. He tries to pay for it with a £5 note, which, of course, is, in old money, way too much.
Yeah. And then he hands him a tenner.
And then he gives him a tenner. He says, okay, you don't want a fiver, have a tenner.
But the train's leaving.
But the train's moving, and the hot dog guy is, like, running alongside the train with a cart going, I can't change this fiver. And then he's like, oh, I'll have a tenner instead. He's like, I can't change a tenner either. And then he ends up with a pig mask.
And that's not the weirdest thing that happens on that train.
No, it's not the weirdest thing. It's not the weirdest thing. I think we did... just for, anybody wondering what on earth has any of this got to do with a magic Christian, it is, of course, the name of a boat in the film. And that the kind of, I suppose, the last 15 or 20 minutes of the film is mostly on the boat.
About the boat.
And we were saying that it would make a really good, like, cult theme party.
Yeah, but everyone would have had to have watched the film.
Yes, it would be a prerequisite.
I think it's definitely worth watching, but I think it's you've got to just stop asking questions.
Yeah.
How many people do you think have seen this film? Like, do we know how popular it was at the time? How popular it's been since? Like, I've literally never heard of it, and I'm a Peter Sellers fan and a Ringo Starr fan.
It came around on television. I watched it once, but it was kind of on really late, and I loved it.
Yeah.
Because it is crazy.
Yeah.
And then I bought the DVD. I was like, I need to watch this again, and I've watched it quite a few times now, and it's still... I'm not even going to say it's one of my favourite films. It isn't. It's just a film that I like to watch because it just makes you laugh.
Yeah, it does make you laugh. If you want a laugh and you like slightly weird 60s films, I would strongly recommend this one.
Yeah,
I share that conclusion.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that's probably all that there is to say on the matter.
There isn't much else to say about that.
By all means, please do go and experience The Magic Christian or any Peter Sellers film, I would say.
The things we've mentioned from the film won't make much sense.
Oh, no sense.
But then again...
It's not like it's a spoiler.
Oh, no, not a spoiler.
You can spoil this film.
Not a spoiler, because you'll not know it's coming when it happens. You'll just be like...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they did mention that thing about the hot dogs. That's what will happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, by all means, see The Magic Christian and... definitely watch a Peter Sellers film if you never have before.
Yes. Always watch Peter Sellers.
Okay, so I'm Ellie and I'm here with the cast and creators of Some Treachery, a Miss McSkimming mystery. Written by Richard Stratton.
Hey.
Stratton, you're also performing in the show, is that right?
I am, yeah.
Good, excellent. I've also got Chris Starkey.
Howdy.
Andy Crane.
Hello.
Who is our Foley sound man. Helen Stratton.
Hello.
And Jessica Bales.
Hiya.
She's our karate expert. So we're all here in my living room actually rehearsing, which is very exciting. And to tell you a little bit about the play, it's a chic lady detective who is in the 1920s and mystery abounds in general. I don't want to give too much away about the plot, but the kind of exciting thing about this show is that it's one night only. You can therefore come only on that night. That's what one night only means.
It does.
And it's at the Putney Arts Theatre. It's on the Saturday the 13th of May at 6 o'clock. It will run for a maximum of an hour. You can buy tickets at blackshawonline.com. And it's a great opportunity to watch a radio play being performed and recorded live in front of your very eyes.
Ooh.
Yes, ooh. Whoa. So you may even, as audience members, be called upon to create some sound effects, but that will be gently led and optional. So don't feel like we're going to put you on stage and immediately ask you to recreate the sound of a 1920s motor car. Although that is a sound Andy's currently having trouble with, so...
It's just not possible.
Not possible.
It's not happening.
Not happening. Good. Good. So it's all boding very well. Other sounds we have are working. Just that niggling one we're left with. So all of the sound effects will be created for you live on stage by the very able Andy and assisted by Dave.
Hi.
Yep, Dave's here too.
Maybe some delay on the sound effects.
Dave's in charge of dramatic pauses. So... So I'm just going to ask people a couple of questions about their role in the production. So I'm going to start with you, Richard Stratton, to my left.
All right.
Yeah, hello. What kind of roles are you playing other than writer, which we're going to just assume is done for now?
Yeah, thankfully that bit's over. Although, maybe not.
Ongoing tweaks
ongoing
are occurring.
Ongoing tweaks. So I am playing the Home Secretary.
Yep. Prestigious.
Chap, yeah. I am playing... male voice. That's,
yes,
that's another part.
It's tricky.
That was a tough one. And I am playing Newton.
Ooh,
not Sir Isaac.
A different Newton altogether.
Yeah, he was not around in 1924.
And have you got to do anything special to be able to differentiate between these characters?
Yeah, I've got to do some accents.
Oh, right, yeah, good.
The one I'm doing at the moment is male voice.
Yes. it's very similar to your natural speaking voice.
It is, yeah. They didn't text me.
Yeah.
And then I have a rather posh Home Secretary, and Newton is from the West Country.
Yes.
So that's good fun. That's hard to start on. Sadly, the first line, I sound Irish every now and again. But yeah. I'm working on it. It's yeah. all going to be great.
Yeah, the word hello is a bit Irishy currently.
Yeah, it is a little Irish.
Hello there. Hello. I'm so sorry, everyone Irish. And then Chris, Chris Starkey, hello.
Hello.
You're a man of many voices on this occasion.
Indeed.
On many occasions.
It's been known.
So what's the principal role you're playing?
I am playing Timothy, mostly. He's the valet... of Miss McSkimming.
Our lead lady, detective lady, yes.
Yeah, he's reliable, dependable.
Yeah, good chap.
Liked running.
Yes, he does a lot of running, which you don't always have to perform yourself.
Very rarely.
Because we've got the lovely Andy and Dave to create those sounds for us. And and you did request a canter at one point.
I did, yeah. Well, I think he skips. He's a skipper, is Timothy.
Light of foot.
unlike the voice producer. yes, indeed. I'm also a Scottish anarchist, lest we forget.
Yes, of course. A very important role.
And Mr. Cuttle.
Mr. Cuttle, who I'm really looking forward to. He bears a striking resemblance to Alan Bennett. So we're all looking forward to that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
That's good.
Excellent. Helen. Hello, Helen.
Hi.
You're playing the lead role. Named in the title of the play.
Yeah, Miss McSkimming.
Yes, a name which is actually pretty tricky to say. Thank you, Richard.
Yes.
And how are you been enjoying playing her?
Thankfully, the voice isn't a million miles from mine. So I'm sort of getting on okay with that. But this is the first acting thing that I've done for a long time, so it's interesting.
Yes, you have a lot to say, but luckily it is in a voice similar to your own. I think if we decided that she had to be Scottish, that might have been a bit of a push.
Yes.
Scottish people everywhere would have been weeping into their porridge.
Yeah.
It's all right, I was born in Scotland, it's fine. I'm so sorry, Scottish people.
I should be the Scottish people.
Oh yeah, no, I've got to insult the Welsh as well at some point, otherwise we're not quite being fair. There aren't actually any Welsh characters in the play, are there?
No,
that's offensive.
Mm. It's mostly because none of us can produce any kind of Welsh accent.
Even the person who is Welsh in the production team yes. can't do a Welsh accent.
No. He's really good at South African, though. Give us your best South African, Dave. Really nailing those vowel sounds. And then lovely Jessica.
Yeah.
Jess. Good. She's very responsive. Any name. So what myriad of roles are you playing?
So I've got quite a few. I'm a maid and she's a cockney.
A bit of a nervous cockney.
She's a nervy cockney. I'm the head butler. I get a promotion.
Yeah.
She's quite stern.
She's very stern.
Yes. I think she scares the boys. I like that it's a lady butler.
Yeah, that's very progressive.
Yes. then I'm a zoo. I'm like man in the zoo ticket booth.
Yep.
I like to think of that character as quite slow.
Yes.
And that's a Brummy accent. So more than my own, because I've lost my Brummy accent.
Yeah,
mostly,
but you've
sadly.
Reclaimed it a little bit just for the zookeeper section.
Nice to go back. I'm
good.
Enjoying it.
Back to your roots.
Yeah, and then I play Molly, who is from the West Country, which that's been my biggest struggle, my biggest challenge.
Yeah, Jess has got a really good trick for getting into the character, because the film Hot Fuzz features a line which Jess has to use each time to get into character. Jess, do you want to just give us that line?
Nothing like a bit of girl on girly.
Classic Olivia Colman there. Yeah, it's beautiful. That's not a line that's featured in the play, so I think Jess just has to kind of whisper it to herself quietly. And then
there's you,
then
Ellie.
Then there's me.
Ellie. Yeah. Ellie, what do you do, Ellie?
What do I do? I do the announcer, who's kind of, not a real person, but a BBC old-style announcer, who's quite chatty. And I play Hannah Chambers, who is one of the...
A subtle performance.
A very subtle performance.
Barely know she's there.
Yeah, I mean, blink and you'll miss her. She is just so subtle. And I'm also... Who am I also? Oh, I do things like kitchen hand and person whose horse is stolen.
Detective.
Oh, and yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, I forgot.
Yeah.
Two bobbies.
Yeah, me and Jess are... A dynamic duo of somewhat incompetent bobbies. Good. I think that's most of the characters covered.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
There's, as you can tell, quite a lot of characters. Five actors. Mm. Three ladies, two gents. And then, of course, two very able sound creators. So it's going to be quite a feast for the eyes and the ears, I think.
Yes.
Mostly the ears.
Mostly the ears. But the thing is about seeing it live, of course, is that you get to see the people performing as well, which is quite a unique experience because it's behind the scenes.
I feel like people's bodies change as well when they're doing different characters, even though it's for radio. Everyone has a different stance for the different person. Yeah. And
absolutely.
Different way of being.
And we've come up with sort of different... ways to make our voices sound as though we're in the situation we're in. So people who've been running for a long time, or people climbing walls, or people falling on the floor. We've got some little hilarious things, where we throw ourselves around to get those effects. So that's definitely worth watching as well.
And we have, of course, all the crazy contraptions that the guys have to make sounds with.
Indeed.
Yes, there is behind us currently a table full of bizarre objects, objets d'art, that would otherwise make no contextual sense at all, but they are used to create the most wonderful sounds you can imagine. It's pretty bit of pressure there, Andy.
A little bit.
Are you enjoying making noise?
I am. Yeah.
What's the hardest one so far?
It's a toss up between wet fish flying through the air or someone bursting through a door, falling over, and running away.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all it's a team effort, so it's not all on me.
You just pass a bit of the responsibility onto Dave. Yeah, good. And how do you come up with things like people running? How are you actually going to be doing that? Are you going to be running around the stage? How's that going to work?
Well, we've got several pairs of shoes, and there's one of them. Those are the metal boots. We might not use those in the end. Yeah, we've got shoes on different surfaces.
Amazing.
Wait to see those surfaces.
I'm so excited about those surfaces.
Trees full of all kinds of substrate. It's really exciting.
Good. Excellent. And for people who have ever wondered how sounds are created for radio, we're not sure. We're making it up. But but this is how we create sounds for radio. If you do know, just tweet us, at Blackshire Update. Any tips are gratefully received. So this is a bit of a sort of foray for us. We haven't done live radio before in this kind of performative capacity. So we're really looking for an audience who are up for joining in, I think. Yeah.
This is imperative, yes.
Yes, good.
I have a question.
Yeah, what's your question?
Richard.
Yes.
Why did you call Miss McSkimming Miss McSkimming when it's so hard to say? especially quickly.
Spite. No. It's a name. The name McSkimming has been jotted down for years, waiting for a character. Because when I was living in Tooting, I was coming home and I was going up the escalator from Tooting Broadway Station. I went up there and there was, you know, there's like the whiteboard signs that they write on. I was going up and as I went up, I saw written on the board, "Would Mr. McSkimming please report to the station staff?"
Amazing.
And I was like, that is the most awesome sign I've ever seen. And that's a really cool name. So originally there was a story about somebody going up and seeing that it'd be their name. And it's an unusual name and there's some mistaken identity and whatnot. But I just never wrote it. So I thought, I'll just use the name somewhere else.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah, I gave it to you guys. So
that's lovely.
But if Mr. McSkimming is out there, or if you know Mr. McSkimming and why he needed to speak to the station staff, it has been bothering me for 4 years.
It could have been a code.
Well, this is why.
Because they use codes for like, emergencies, don't they, in the tubes?
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Sand is fire.
Yeah. Mm.
But we all know Mr. that now, so I think they've changed it.
Maybe.
Yeah. That's Mr. Flames!
So subtle.
Yeah.
I don't think I have any questions for anyone now.
I wanted to know if anyone has seen a Foley performance, like what we're doing.
Yeah, it's so fun. I think it's really, really good fun to watch it being made. So much more than just listening to it, I think.
Yeah. I think it's more fun from rehearsals, from an actor's perspective as well, because you can actually have some kind of communication between you and the people producing the sound. It's not all canned sound that is just press go and press stop. That it can actually kind of evolve organically as part of the creative process, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
Plus, there's always the risk. There's a risk involved that something will go wrong.
You'll certainly hit
the wrong horn.
Yeah. I think if you're a fan of Schadenfreude, then you should come along just to see how many times it may potentially go wrong.
But as an actor, you don't quite realise how difficult some of it is to make as well. So it's quite impressive when you see it all being done in real time.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, for a lot of shows that we've done in the past, Andy has created sound effects that we've then used as canned sound effects, but they've been created from scratch. So, you know, things like when Dave had to create a scary bird monster, it's him flapping big towels, and Andy doing the sound of a dog running on wet sand is him punching a wet towel. So
all of our sound effects are done with towels. Yeah. Yeah.
They're towels very
are
useful.
Key items.
Do we have any towels in this one?
There's a tea towel.
There's a tea towel. Tea towel.
You've always got to bring a towel. Is that Douglas Adams?
It is.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Got no way your towel is.
Well, on that note, everyone should come and see the show.
Absolutely.
With your towel.
Yeah, with your towel, if you like.
I've got a question.
Yeah, what?
What's the date again?
Okay, good question, because you need to be there. It is Saturday the 13th of May, 6 p.m, Putney Arts Theatre. You can book your tickets at blackshoreonline.com.
Yeah.
Hey!